Hello, I'm Richard Aidy. This is the Media Report on RN, online and the ABC Radio app. Today, another chance to hear about one of the hottest second comings in the media. I'm talking about audio, about programs that you don't hear on the radio. So podcasting, like this.
How's it going? This is Mark Maron. This is WTF. I'm in a hotel room.
Yes, welcome to the podcast where we reveal the fascinating characters and bizarre tales.
You understand you called a listing where you're going to be recorded?
Yes, ma'am.
What were the objects of envy in Beijing back in those days?
Wristwatches, sewing machines, tape recorders.
This is Night Vale's hippest event, and everyone is there because it is required by law.
That's all we've got time for this happy hour. Thank you for being with us, everybody. HamishNandy.com for anything you may miss. The podcast is there as well.
The downloadable MP3 file has been used by broadcasters, comedians, two guys talking about football, indeed, almost anything for more than a decade now. But in the last year or so, podcasting's really taken off. It's become something people are aware of, even if they don't listen to. It's prompted articles in papers from the New York Times to the Sydney Morning Herald. And most of that is because of one show, Serial, which is presented by Sarah Koenig.
For the last year, I've spent every working day trying to figure out where a high school kid was for an hour after school one day in 1999. Or if you want to get technical about it, and apparently I do, where a high school kid was for 21 minutes after school one day.
Serial, about one crime that was 16 years ago, has become a cultural phenomenon, with 5 million people downloading an episode. And this has pushed podcasting into the light. But before it was even out there, another This American Life producer, Alex Bloomberg, one of the guys who started Planet Money, decided to leave his secure job to start a new business making podcasts.
Have you been talking to my wife? I saw an opportunity to do something that I thought should be happening, which is, you know, I was working for these podcasts that were being created in the public radio system, and I was seeing them finding an audience and just generating a lot of excitement, and I felt like I knew what kinds of programming audiences liked, and I knew how to make it. And I felt like, well, look, we did this once. We created the show called Planet Money that was a big hit. We should be doing more of that. Like, we should be doing a car show and a politics show. I mean, just it felt very obvious that, like, people wanted on-demand digital audio, and they wanted the kind of stuff that we were producing. And it just wasn't happening fast enough, and there wasn't really the ability to develop a business model to make it happen fast enough. And I felt like I had an idea about how to do that. So that's sort of what made me want to go this for-profit business route. Yeah. It just felt like the fastest way to do it.
And how well did you understand the process of getting set up?
Of starting a company?
Yeah.
Oh, not well at all. I didn't understand a thing about it, really. What kind of company are you going to be? How do you raise money? How do you pitch people whose money you're trying to raise? And that stuff I didn't really understand at all. I had very little clue what a professional investor was. And then the real thing that I didn't really know about was sort of that there's a way to raise money that doesn't even involve professional investors necessarily. There's all sorts of projects that people with money are interested in funding, and venture capitalists are one very small sliver of that group of people out there. And so I just had a lot to learn.
He did, as you can hear.
I want to start a company that will create the content for all these people to listen to who are like moving into the digital future slash present.
Digital future slash present? Yeah, who says that? If I'm honest, I sound like a douchebag, dropping all this jargon. Instead of saying listening to the radio, saying consuming audio. Also, notice how the more nervous I become, the higher my voice gets.
So you're uniquely positioned to do it because you're better at it than anybody?
Yeah.
Well, of course, you documented it all in the first series of Startup. How important was that, was actually making the podcast in getting the company started?
Oh, I mean, I think it was, you know, I think it was immensely important. When we were talking to people before, you're just talking to them and you're saying, I will do this. I will build this company that will make these podcasts that people will listen to. And it's all very theoretical. And once we had Startup up and running, we could point to startup and say, look, we did this already. We started this podcast and it got this many listens and people are talking about it. And so it just made us more credible, I think. It also just brought out, you know, got our message out to a lot of people. There hadn't been something that really documented the process in a way that they understood and sort of felt it. And I think they sort of really sparked to that. The fact that I was talking about like the crazy feelings you have and the experience of FOMO and, you know, just sort of like the emotional journey that you go on when you're trying to start a company. It's something that all these guys are very familiar with and talk about amongst themselves, but it didn't really make it into the public that much. So I think they really sparked to that. You know, and once and then we had people writing to us saying, hey, I heard startup, I want in, basically. And once you're in that situation, then it's pretty easy to raise the money.
In fact, when Gimlet Media, the company Alex started, needed another $200,000, he invited podcast listeners to buy in and had the money within hours. Total raised $1.5 million. But how big is podcasting really? Nick Kwa runs the podcasting newsletter Hot Pod.
In the past 10 years, it's been very sort of steady 25% year-over-year growth. But in the past year, the exact nature of the jump from last year's numbers to this year's numbers, on my reading, it has yet to be fully determined. But I'm guessing that the sort of awareness of podcasting as a form of audio distribution has jumped about like 35 to 40%. It's much higher than in previous years.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of things about that. One is that there's a difference between awareness and the number of people who've actually listened to a podcast, isn't there? Because
yes.
Podcasting, and we'll get to this in a moment, in part because of one particular podcast, it's become a kind of phenomenon. And the other thing is, this is off, although we're talking relative increases, we're talking in absolute terms, still relatively small numbers.
Oh, it's still very much niche, yes.
But it's a niche that's coming to the attention of big business.
We are beginning to see more interest among bigger name brands. For a long time, the advertisers that were interested in podcasting as a medium were relatively small, niche brands that tend to be technology startups. Stuff like Squarespace, stuff like MailChimp, stuff like nowadays Blue Apron, things like that. Brands using podcasting to generate a small but very informed audience base. But now we're beginning to see interest from much larger brands like Ford, like GE. They're beginning to come into the space, both as advertisers on existing podcasts and as brands who are trying to create their own podcasts via a form of very specific audio content marketing.
Nick Kwa from podcasting newsletter Hot Pod. Alex Bloomberg has moved from public radio producer to chief executive of a small company, Gimlet Media, which at the moment makes three different podcasts. But that's not all it does.
And then we sell ads on those shows. You know, we have a production schedule. We sell ads on those shows, and that's where the revenue comes from. And then we have a staff that's just in charge of developing new content, new shows, and new programs. So it's pretty straightforward. We just make content, really. We're about making stuff.
Because when I was listening to the series Startup, ads was part of it, but you were also looking to sell other things to people as well.
Yeah, so that was originally the idea that came from my days at Planet Money, where we did this project where we followed a t-shirt around the world and we documented how it got made and we interviewed the people at the spinning factories and the cotton farmers and we interviewed the people who, you know, worked in the t-shirt factory where our shirt was made. And then we sold the t-shirt to our listeners, essentially through Kickstarter. And we ended up raising a lot of money on that. We sold 25,000 t-shirts, I think, and which brought in close to $600,000. And that was really just like sort of an eye-opener. So that was it's always been part of the plan here. When we actually enact that plan remains to be seen. We want to make it part of our business, and we plan on sort of making a foray into that this summer. But how exactly we're going to present it, how we're going to package it, how we're going to think about it, presenting it to our listeners, we're still working on that.
Alex Bloomberg. Listening to the first season of Startup provides real insights into how his company was born and how it's changed along the way. For example, throughout the series, Alex, along with his business partner Matt Lieber, is tossing around the idea of whether to be a kind of tech company as much as a content company. And you can understand why. Podcasting is ripe for a technological improvement. There are some apps that are better than others, but there's nothing that's as easy to use or to share in a social way as something like Instagram. Now, developing that something seems to be, well, not such a priority.
I wouldn't say it's been abandoned. It's definitely been put on a slower phase of development. I mean, basically, you know, I think the demand for content is so huge. And we see that with, like, we launch these shows and, like, you know, they just get, they, you know, people are very hungry for new content. Serial, you know, the podcast that my colleagues at This American Life launched, that really was an eye-opener. Like, wow, you can get 5 million people downloading a podcast every episode. Like, that is... Those are audience sizes that I believed would come. I did not believe they would come 4 months after I started the company. So it just feels like if that's the potential, like, we just need to create content. You know what I mean? That's what people are hungriest for. That's what we are the best at creating. Like, us sort of like fooling around with the tech platform and trying to figure out how to hire a CTO and it just feels like that's not what we are currently constituted to do. That having been said, like, I think if part of the plan is that we will eventually want to, you know, start building out some tech. I'm not sure it'll be a consumer app, though. I think there's a lot of big companies, the Googles, the Spotifys, SoundCloud, that are all about tech and sound. And it seems a little foolish for us to sort of throw our hat into that ring.
Alex Bloomberg from Gimlet Media. And you're on The Media Report with me, Richard Ady. This week, podcasting 2.0.
Hello, Santa, says an elderly couple. Merry Christmas, says Santa, somewhat unconvincingly. Look at that, says the man to his partner. A self-conscious Santa. They walk off, laughing at Santa. Merry Christmas, says Santa, to random members of the public, but it doesn't feel right. I'm a fake, says Santa fearfully to himself.
Total fake and a phony.
Santa checks his reflection in the front window of Dick Smith Electronics. He is pleased with what he sees. I will be a better Santa. I will not be a crap Santa.
A smidgen of a podcast called Shortage of Santas, which comes from a tiny podcast-making concern, Paper Radio. It's the brainchild of John Chia, whose day job is at the Wheeler Centre.
What we do with Paper Radio is we produce original fiction and non-fiction pieces with a very kind of heady mix of sound design, and we also commission illustrators to produce what we call album covers for each one. So we've seen ourselves for the last 5 years as producing original work that appears in its first form on our podcast.
The way you're talking about it, it's almost like art. You know, this is art in a particular form, the audio form, and it's not big commercial art that gets a huge marketing budget behind it. It's art that people discover or know about.
Yeah, that's right. Our focus has been on seeing this as sort of an art project. We've tried to sort of position podcasts, and I sort of hesitate to say radio art, but something of that realm, as something that's valid and, again, worth funding, but through arts funding bodies and stuff like that. At the same time, the real sort of business angle has started to build on podcasting, and that's forced us to kind of consider, well, you know, we started this with the mindset of an artist. Do we have to think like business people? Do we have to consider ourselves entrepreneurial in the same way that I would say a lot of new American podcasters are considering themselves?
Paper Radio is a two-person operation. It's pretty much as small as a serious podcaster can be. And John Chia is very aware that in America, the scale is different.
On the one hand, I'm very envious of the wonderful people that produce all this great work over there and who do it with every hour of their working day and every hour of their working week. All of their conversations at work are about this work. On the other hand, there are certain conditions in America, a sort of built-in public radio audience, a built-in geographic proximity that really helps these things get off the ground. For them to do a live show means maybe increasing their audience by thousands, whereas even if we did a very big live show, and we've been part of live shows in Australia, that might have increased our audience by dozens. It's a population thing. It's also partly that the established players in America are largely where at least this first crop of talent of independent business is coming from. And, you know, there is sort of on this episode of This American Life, we're going to feature a little bit of this new podcast from our former producer, Alex Bloomberg. And that stuff is obviously a really great way to market to an existing massive audience. And that's how Serial goes straight to the top of the iTunes charts. but you know, the only broadcasters that really have Australia-wide reach here, again, is the ABC, and it's not really kind of part of what the ABC would do to support, you know, basically to show bias towards a commercial operator here.
Ah, yes, the ABC. You must have been wondering when it would get a mention. Actually, the corporation is Australia's biggest podcaster. Conversations with Richard Feidler is a massive hit, as are many of RN's programs like Late Night Live, The Science Show, and Life Matters. None of which, though, is anything like this.
Paleo fans completely cut out dairy because paleo people didn't have cows.
I don't eat any dairy at all.
And also no legumes. So this means no cheese, no chickpeas, no palak paneer for you, none of that. And that's all fine. But then there's science. Officially, the Paleolithic period begins around 2.5 million years ago. No, T-Rex was dead long before this.
That's a taste of Science Versus, the brainchild of RN digital producer and journalist Wendy Zuckerman, and number one on the Australian iTunes chart. Science Versus is one of the ABC's three podcast-only shows. The producer of this audio-on-demand project is Caitlin Sorey.
If you look at iTunes, what does really well is comedy, science, history. But how can we do that in a different way to what ABC Radio has been doing already? So if you step back, the audience we're targeting is different to what the networks are talking to. So we're targeting 30 to 45-year-olds. So how do you make those topics interesting for that age group rather than kind of doing it in a more traditional way? Because it's not being broadcast on radio, we can be a bit more challenging. We can put a lot more adult content on it as long as we've branded it saying, you're in for a bit of a ride. There's going to be some pretty intense language and themes here. They're available on a whole range of apps. When you look at the stats, there's a whole bunch of different apps that people are accessing them through. So, you know, Pocket Caster, Downcast, iCatcher, a whole bunch of apps, including the ABC Radio app and the ABC Radio player.
And the other thing I noticed, they're not particularly ABC branded.
Well, they've got the ABC brand on it, but I guess we're trying to seek out new audiences that aren't listening to ABC Radio already.
Mm.
We're chasing an audience that are perhaps listening to lots of American podcasts, but are interested in Australian content. So how can we make something that's eye-catching? And if you look at a lot of the podcast apps, they're very image heavy. It's not really about the text. You need really arresting images that kind of jump out at people because that's the first thing they see. So we've engaged designers that, you know, have a kind of different take on how you can make something look really beautiful and interesting.
So how important do you think podcasting is now to the ABC and will be in the future?
I think it's incredibly important. I think new cars have got Bluetooth attachments. People who are on long commutes who can't afford to live in the city, the apps are getting better and better. You know, this is a really, really important space for the ABC to continue doing well in. We've been doing great stuff for the last 10 years, and now it's about how do we start to kind of look at what, you know, some of the American podcasts have been doing and how do we kind of learn from them and do Australian content that's hitting that same group.
I'm wondering if, though, what radio program makers do is slightly different sometimes from what podcasters do because you listen in a different way. So radio is, it's often a companion medium. It's on there while you're doing other things. Podcasting is a more deliberate thing to do, isn't it? You've got to choose to do it. You don't just turn a button and there it is, and then you listen to what's there. You're choosing to listen to something specifically. And I think it's a more, in a way, intense interaction.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Absolutely.
I'm wondering if there are, if that affects how programs are made and how content's made, given that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you have to, yeah, like even the mix, like when I'm mixing something, I've been listening to it on the bus and like, I can't hear any of this because I've got the background noise of the bus. And the way you speak to a podcasting audience, you're right. Like you're choosing to click on this, you're choosing to download it. It's not just a update of what's happening with the traffic or, you know, the daily news. It's like, it's an experience in of itself that can live on long after you've created that program.
Caitlin Sorey from ABC Audio On Demand. The Australian podcast landscape is dominated by radio programs. And it's the same in America. But there, it's a bigger, richer ecosystem. Here's Nick Kwa from Hotpot.
Attention should be drawn to the networks playing at the fringes, the networks playing at a more specific and a lot more vibrant communities, stuff, networks like the Loudspeakers Network, which is a fantastic, very, very culturally rich podcast network. More commercial and larger size players like Podcast One and Midroll, which is a podcast sort of media company that oversees two really, really well-known comedy podcast networks called Wolf Pop and Earwolf. These are all players playing at very specific communities, and I don't think they've achieved a certain cultural size or traction, but I have a sense that they're growing, and we're going to reach a point where the space is a lot more flat and the space is a lot more integrated in terms of the multiplicity of the different voices we have in the podcasting industry.
Interesting, you touched on Earwolf, which is often comedy-based. Comedy has been, in a way, the big success story, the kind of rock stars of podcasting, hasn't it?
Yes. We can all thank Mark Maron for that.
I understand that he's able to charge a lot of money to put an ad in his podcast, and he's very unusual in that.
Absolutely. Well, it's also because he commands listener numbers that is, you know, largely unparalleled to other relatively independent podcasts. I don't think his artistry is expressed anywhere better than in his podcast.
Yeah. Mark Maron is a big podcast star. He's making real money with his work. Here he is with Australian actor Rose Byrne.
I don't know how to do Shakespeare.
No, I don't even know.
I don't even know how to read it.
I don't know. I only really, Hamlet I studied and I love. And I actually studied Twelfth Night and The Tempest. I loved English, so I loved.
So you studied that. As literature. But to act them, geez.
Yeah.
That's a chore.
The language is amazing. Like,
that's what I hear.
You know what I mean? They're like, he's really the greatest writer
We're making news here.
Just
Rose Byrne has decided that Shakespeare is a pretty good writer right here on my show.
Guys, Bill Shakespeare. Have you heard of him?
Awesome writer.
Bill Shakespeare.
Got a handle on the language, that fella.
Can write. Can write well.
Mark Maron, Planet Money, Startup. This rich brew is prompting some heavyweight names to start looking hard at distribution.
Recently, we've seen other players trying to make a run for the space. Most prominently is a company like Spotify, which is a music streaming service that's trying to, you know, broaden its business model and trying to use and jump on the back of non-music audio, as what they called it.
Spotify is a big and successful business, of course. How important is that as a development?
I think it's pretty significant. So my understanding of Spotify is that they have had podcasting plans for a while, 1 or 2 years maybe. This is significant for the podcasting space on two levels. One, it's going to introduce a lot more people who are not native podcast listeners, who are not really acquainted with the concept of a podcast, and it's going to sort of bring the form in front of their eyes and in front of their ears. I suspect that it could drive up a lot of new listeners to the form in general. But the second most important contribution that they're bringing to the table is in the manner in which they are providing podcasters analytics, which is one of the major problems that is plaguing the space. That's just not a good sense of how people listen. There's just not a good sense of how many people and from where are they listening to these podcasts. And what Spotify is bringing to the table is significant because it's so much more advanced than many other players in the space right now.
And analytics, whether that comes from Spotify or SoundCloud or Google, are helpful to all podcasters, big and small, because they enable you to try things and quickly measure how well they work. John Cheer of Paper Radio has, you might remember, a day job at Melbourne's Wheeler Centre.
The Wheeler Centre, since the beginning, has podcast pretty much every talk that we've presented. What we're hoping to do is to introduce a more complete hosted format to our podcasts. So we currently have a main podcast which has all of our over 200 talks a year on it. But we also have a bunch of series podcasts, for example, one that focuses on media and politics, one that is a series of conversations with authors down at the Mornington Peninsula. So what we're hoping to do is basically improve the sound and the texture and the variety that goes into our audio. And alongside that, Andrew Denton will be presenting our annual Die Gribble argument, and his topic is going to be on voluntary assisted dying. As part of that, we're going to launch a podcast where Andrew is basically recording all of the conversations and research that he's that he's doing in order to put together his argument. That's kind of a big series, and I think it'll be really interesting audio long-form journalism and a really exciting kind of experiment.
John Cheer. Podcasting is in the zeitgeist, and if you love audio as much as I do, that's great. But is it also in something else? Something we usually associate with Sydney's real estate, a bubble. Alex Bloomberg of Gimlet Media says this question is his number one concern.
How does this last? How do we build on this success? How do we make sure that this isn't some sort of crazy bubble? If it is a crazy bubble, how do we protect against that and sort of, you know, stay viable through it? And especially when it comes to the ad revenues, like, I think they're way higher than we were projecting they would be at this point, you know? There's some structural reasons for that in the podcasting world. Like, when you have a podcast that a lot of people are listening to, there's just not that much inventory, so people will pay more when there's limited supply. And then there's the host read, so that's an advantage, I think, to a lot of advertisers, that they will pay a little bit more for. But it also feels like that, you know, they could, ad rates have plunged before and brought down a lot of media businesses. So that's something that we want to, you know, be on guard against.
We're nearly done, but I couldn't finish without asking podcast nerd Nick Kwa about his listening.
Oh, man. I principally listen on my phone. I use an app called Pocket Cast. I don't really know why I use it. I use it because it's just nicely designed and it feels very much, it makes the chaotic world of podcasts a little bit more ruly, which is, you know, it kind of highlights another problem, which is curation discovery. There's just too many independent podcasters hitting the space and it's really hard to tell what's good, other than leaning back on something like, you know, a show that WNYC puts out and WBEZ puts out. But in terms of what I'm listening to, I recently got into a show called The Illusionist, which is a really fascinating show that examines language. It's by a podcaster called Helen Zaltzman. It's fascinating. I highly recommend it. And something that I'm trying to get into, I'm trying to still understand, is a new show that's coming out of the podcast network known as Wolf Pop, called The Blacklist Table Reads, which is sort of a mix between, you know, a Hollywood-style table read in which actors sit around and sort of read, play out a script, and a traditional audio drama.
You must walk around with your headphones on all day, just about.
I'm walking around, sitting down. It's a bit of a problem.
There are worse problems. Nick Kwa from podcast newsletter Hot Pod. Thanks to him and Alex Bloomberg from Gimlet Media, John Cheer from Paper Radio and the Wheeler Centre, and the ABC's Caitlin Sorey. And since this program originally went to air, there's been a few developments. Wendy Zukerman's Science Versus podcast, which you heard a taste of earlier, has been snapped up by Alex Bloomberg and company at Gimlet Media. So Wendy's now in New York. Apparently Wendy, who didn't have a staff job at the ABC, retained the intellectual property of Science Versus, which has turned out to be a smart, smart move. What else? Oh, John Cheer's Wheeler Centre is co-producing and hosting a podcast series from Andrew Denton about euthanasia called Better Off Dead. This further explores the issues he covered in his Die Gribble argument for the Wheeler Centre at the end of October. And the second series of Serial is also available as a stream from Pandora. Not many people saw that coming. The program's produced by Jackie May. Our sound engineer is Michelle Watts. I'm Richard Addy. Thanks for listening.